This episode of She Explores is brought to you by Merrill. Merrill exists to give you all you need to discover the simple yet profound power of the trail. They believe the trail is for everybody and everybody. Merrill's goal is to provide thoughtfully designed, rigorously tested products that over-deliver on performance, versatility, and durability. Because when you've got air in your lungs and good shoes on your feet, you've got everything you need. Stay tuned for later in the episode. We'll talk with Merrill Ambassador Emily Struss about her upcoming hiking trip to Greece. Learn more at Merrill.com. I'm Gail Straub, and you're listening to She Explores.
If you're talking about the dangers of going solo, you know, I deal with more on my commute to work than I do in the outdoors. I deal more with things just walking down the street, you know, or shopping in the grocery store. I deal with far more sticky situations or harassment when I'm just in my, you know, nice little neighborhood in Portland than I do in any other situation outdoors.
This is Sarah Grothchen. Sarah is a journalist who wants to rewrite the narratives we've often been told about safety as women spending time outdoors, whether it's solo or with other women. For as often as we're told that solo excursions aren't for us, the backcountry is where Sarah feels safest. Women are all too familiar with the feeling of being honked at, shouted at, leered at. We're familiar with being groped and told to smile. It's exhausting and terrifying because we never know when it's going to escalate into something more dangerous. Sarah's a hard worker with an adventurous spirit. She went to college in her home state of Ohio, but moved to LA at 20, back to Ohio to finish college, and out to New York City for an internship at 21. She felt like a city girl at heart, but in 2014, something drew her to a small town in Southwest Washington for her budding career in journalism.
I moved to Washington State when I was 23 years old. I moved from Ohio by myself with $800 in my bank account to start a job as a journalist at a newspaper in a pretty small town. I didn't know anybody, I didn't have any family, and I really started backpacking as a way to kind of overcome some of the loneliness I felt and to just explore and enjoy the new state. It was super new to me. And I think at that point was when I started thinking about, is this dangerous? Because I was doing it by myself all the time.
Sarah didn't really consider hiking solo dangerous until people started asking her about it. As hiking and backpacking became a more central part of her life and identity, people questioned why she did it without a man.
I didn't think of it as that dangerous. Even when I started, I felt super comfortable outside. I knew that there were dangers of possibly getting lost because I was so new to the outdoors. And I knew that there was the danger of it being too cold. Again, I was so new, I didn't really know necessarily what to pack, what to wear, what to bring. I mean, my first backpacking trip, I actually used a day pack for a four-night backpacking trip because I was so new to it. I was just trying to figure it all out by myself, this city girl who moved to Washington State on a whim.
Because Sarah didn't know anyone, she was self-taught. As a journalist, she knows how to check sources and research a story. So to teach herself outdoor skills, she scoured the internet and social media for advice and hike ideas.
Even if I don't come from a background where I grew up hiking, if it's something I want to do, I'll do it. Like, I've always been pretty determined. If I really like something and it really catches my eye, I'll make it happen.
That thing was hiking, then backpacking. Both were a respite from her intense need to perform.
So I was always really driven in college. I was kind of a workaholic. Like, I would joke with my roommates in college that I think my longest that I went without sleep was 1 week. I only had 2 hours of sleep in 1 week because I was working so much. I always had multiple internships, multiple jobs at different like student-run newspapers. And I was always taking above what I should have been with my credit hours. in school. So I was like a really big workaholic. I was not in very good shape. I think I went to the gym all of like 5 times the whole time I was in college. I mean, it was pretty crazy how devoted I was to not sleeping and just working constantly. And when I graduated college, it was 6 months before I moved out west. And I kind of realized this lifestyle wasn't really maintainable. I was just burning myself out. So 6 months later, when I moved out to the Pacific Northwest, I remember first of all being awestruck by the beauty of, you know, the Pacific Northwest, the waterfalls, the mountain ranges. I mean, it's just incredible. Driving down the highway and seeing Mount Hood was pretty crazy to me. It was nothing I'd ever experienced before. But then the feeling of finding that balance when I would go outside and not be able to check my email, not be able to text my boss, not have him be able to get a hold of me, not really think about anything but my immediate needs. I need to get to wherever I need to get to, whether that's like, you know, back to the trailhead by sundown, or if I need to set up camp by sunset, you know, whatever it was like my immediate needs were so much more important than my job, than what I had to do on Monday. And I think that was what attracted me to it so much. It offered so much balance to a lifestyle that previously had not been balanced whatsoever. And it also gave me another part of my identity. I was no longer just a writer or just a journalist. I was also this backpacker. And it was something that, you know, no one could take from me because I didn't need anybody's permission or anybody to publish my work to have that title. I was always going to be a backpacker. And so that to me was like super empowering. And I think that's when I just fell in love with it. I mean, I think that was kind of the turning point.
Hiking and backpacking helped Sarah cultivate an identity outside of work, but it was also a respite from something more sinister that took shape 7 months into her time living in Longview, Washington.
So I was driving to Portland one day to get a new computer. And as I was driving there, I got in a car wreck. I was in stop and go traffic. It was midday, sunny, but someone fell asleep at the wheel and rear-ended me. So, you know, I was fine for the most part. I did have whiplash, but I was able to drive away from it after, you know, talking to the police and, you know, swapping insurance and everything. The next day, I decided to go to the ER at the advice of my parents, who were like, you know, you should go to the ER and just make sure that you can connect this car wreck to any possible injuries. I felt fine, but it did turn out that I had suffered whiplash. And sometimes those symptoms don't show up for a while. So I was prescribed muscle relaxers and sent on my way. But while I was at the ER, I remember, so this was the day after my car wreck, I remember looking at my phone and I saw that I had a missed call from a restricted number.
We all get these calls, right? Telemarketers, pledge drives, poll takers. I know I don't think much of them. Neither did Sarah.
So I remember throughout that day, you know, I went to the pharmacy to get my muscle relaxers, I remember seeing the call again, just ignored it, decided I didn't want to deal with it. You know, I was trying to figure out what to do with my car. And at that point, you know, realizing that I had an injury that I needed to treat. So I had a lot on my mind, not to mention I was still only 7 months in to living in a completely new state where I didn't know anybody and a new job. Fresh out of college, still figuring everything out, and I was dealing with this car wreck and this injury. I mean, it was a lot on my plate. So I ended up just, I remember like going home, and all throughout that day, I kept getting these restricted calls and I kept missing them, or I would see them and just ignore them. Again, not thinking anything of it. I wasn't getting any voicemails, just really wasn't paying that much attention to it until that night. And I remember this so clearly. I was sitting that night on my couch, and in my apartment at that time, I had a one bedroom, and I've always liked a lot of natural light. So I had windows like all throughout my apartment. So it's like 11 o'clock, and I'm sitting on the couch next to one of the windows, and I'm kind of like slumped down on the couch. I'd just taken a muscle relaxer. I was just trying to get comfortable for the night, and I was watching something on Netflix. And I actually had my phone, I remember this so vividly. I had my phone face down, but I remember it lit up. I could tell that someone was calling me. It kind of illuminated part of the couch. And I immediately thought that was kind of weird because, you know, I'm from Ohio, so no one would be calling me at 11 o'clock Pacific time. I thought it was weird. I flipped the phone over and I saw that it was a restricted number. And I immediately knew that it was bad news. I got the worst feeling in the pit of my stomach. I mean, I just quickly put two and two together that someone had been calling me all day from this restricted number. I knew it wasn't my alma mater. I knew it wasn't an insurance company. I knew it wasn't my family. And it just immediately made me uncomfortable. And I answered the phone, and it was a man on the other end of the phone. And he just asked me an inappropriate question. And I just immediately hung up the phone. I knew that it wasn't a joke. I knew that it wasn't a hoax or a prank call. I immediately hung up the phone and called 911. And I actually couldn't even get the call through because he called back so many times in a row that I could not even get my call to go through. It was really scary. I didn't know if he was in my apartment. I mean, that definitely crossed my mind. I didn't know if he was outside my apartment watching me through the window. It was pitch black outside. I couldn't see. I didn't know if he was in my complex. I didn't live in a very secure complex at the time, so it was very possible. And I just remember that awful feeling. You know, you're thousands of miles away from anyone you know, any family, anybody that can kind of help you. I had no, like, I couldn't just run to my parents' house and stay at their house. You know, I couldn't just run to my best friend's house. I was alone in this new state, and someone was doing something. You know, someone was starting to harass me. I didn't even at that point know that it was a stalker. I just thought, someone wants something from me, and I don't quite even know the magnitude of it yet.
The police didn't come that night when Sarah called. A new friend who worked with her picked her up, checked around her building for anyone lurking, gave her a key to her apartment, and let her stay the night.
The police didn't come that night. They actually didn't come for, I think, at least 2 or 3 days. I just consistently called because I was being harassed. I mean, the calls picked up quite quickly, where he was calling me pretty incessantly every day, just being inappropriate on the phone. So I really didn't know still that he was stalking me. I actually didn't figure it out until one of my neighbors came forward and said that he spooked his girlfriend. So one of my neighbors at my complex said that this guy had come by and he saw him prowling my car at night. And he'd been doing it every night for a while at 2 in the morning, 2, 3 a.m. looking at my car. So he knew what car I drove. That's when I realized he knew where I lived. And it was quite scary because I did not know that this person had been following me. And I didn't know that he knew what car I drove. I didn't know any of that. And there actually had been an incident where a guy months earlier had followed me to my car. And I believe it was the same person. Someone had followed me to my car and like tried to, I guess they were trying to get in. I ended up screaming loud enough that he got spooked and ran away. It was midday. But I have reason to believe it was the same person, which means this was going on for months without me having any idea that it was happening. So that was pretty crazy. And the lack of police response was what prompted me to consider leaving. I remember the police were just not helpful. They were very unprofessional in this town that I was in. And so I ended up going and getting some knives from my drawer, and I put one of them under my pillow in my bedroom. And I put one by my couch in my living room, and I held one. I remember being up super late at night, just staring at my door, holding a knife. And these knives were cheap, flimsy, plastic handles, like just flimsy knives. They weren't anything that was offering me a lot of protection. I wasn't making a lot of money as a journalist at the time, so I couldn't really afford to get out of town and like get a hotel. It was pretty limiting. And like I said, I didn't have any family in that area. So I really didn't have anywhere to go. I was just in my apartment with no police intervention, really. I mean, really nothing. And I remember that was when my mind shifted to Heather Anderson. I had been reading a lot about Heather. She had, I think, pretty recently at that time, set the speed record for hiking the PCT.
Heather Anderson's trail name is Anish. She actually just completed the Triple Crown in one calendar year. That's hiking the Appalachian Trail, Pacific Crest Trail, and Continental Divide Trail within 12 months. She's a very determined athlete. But back to 2014.
I'd been reading an article that was published. I remember just thinking back to that article because in that article, she had told one of the reporters that basically, you know, people had asked her time and time again, aren't you afraid of being a woman alone in the wilderness? And her answer was, no, I don't. I think it's one of the safest places for a woman to be. And I had not backpacked at that point at all. I hadn't gone on my backpacking trip. I actually didn't do that until a few months later. I hadn't done that at all. But I remember thinking as I sat there, you know, holding a knife and thinking, what am I going to do? I think it would be safer for me to drive, for me to buy that gear and to drive off the grid and just backpack somewhere to get away from him, to just drive until, you know, for hours. Like I was thinking I'll drive for hours and then I'll hike for miles and then I will be gone and he will not see me and he will not know where I'm at. And that to me felt so much safer than being in my locked apartment. Being far away in the wilderness seemed like a much better place for me.
And you were totally in control in doing that. Like you going, driving, hiking, camping, you know, it's so corny to say, but like you're in the driver's seat, like you're the person who's able to make all the decisions for yourself. No one else is doing that. Was that appealing too?
Absolutely. I mean, there's nothing that makes you feel more exposed than realizing that someone's been following you.
We'll hear more from Sarah after this. Merrill exists to give you all you need to discover the simple yet profound power of the trail.
This summer, I will be hiking in Greece and using my feet and my backpack to explore a new land that I've never been to.
I caught up with Merrill Ambassador Emily Struss about her upcoming hiking trip to Greece.
I'm just traveling from Athens north to Skopelos Island because I'm obsessed with the movie Mamma Mia, and that's where the movie was filmed. So I am just going to be traveling north and doing some hiking around on that island, just experiencing island life.
I also asked Emily about her favorite Merrill shoes.
My favorite hiking boot is the Siren Traveler Q2. And I took this boot on the Inca Trail and it was marvelous. It's not too heavy. It doesn't feel like it won't hold up. It's just like the perfect weight. I didn't get any blisters or anything like that. And it was just really comfortable and held up throughout the entire Inca Trail in Peru.
Stay tuned for more stories with Merrill this summer. And to learn more in the meantime, visit Merrill.com. That's MERRELL.com.
I mean, there's nothing that makes you feel more exposed than realizing that someone's been following you.
We're back, and Sarah is sharing the fear and doubt that comes when you find out much of what you take for granted in your young life. Safety, a sense of agency and independence, isn't exactly what you thought it was.
So vulnerable, realizing that your privacy has been breached, and to have the police tell you that this person that's following you has done nothing wrong. I mean, at one point he broke into the trunk of my car, which was partially open because of my car wreck. He was able to get in there and take clothes out of the trunk and throw them all over my car, including hanging one of my bras on my side mirror. I mean, talk about feeling, you know, invaded. So yeah, it felt like going to the backcountry felt like I was taking control of my life in a way that, you know, I wasn't able to in that town because my privacy was, I don't know, I just felt so taken advantage of. It felt like getting out would have been taking control again.
You'd always believed that cops would take care of you, you know, that like if something happens that you are believed and that there are repercussions for something like what happened to you happening. How did that feel for that not to be something that was actually helpful in the situation that you were going through?
It honestly felt like someone just like punched me in the stomach. I mean, because when this stuff started happening, it was that narrative that I was told that scream and someone will help you, call the cops and they'll do something about it. I mean, growing up, you know, I remember when I was a kid, I'll always remember the police force would come to your, you know, grade school and they would talk to you and you would meet them and you would get comfortable with them and they would talk to you about safety and stranger danger. And there's just always this narrative of if you're in trouble, you have some people on your side. You know, if you feel threatened or you're being harassed, that you can do something about it. And there was, even though when these calls started, I was very afraid, I also felt like I still had something I could do. I still had some power. And then when the police did nothing, and I mean, the police, even at one point, because I told them, hey, this guy's been checking my personal website. They took a look at my personal website and they saw a photo of me in hiking clothes. And they said, you know, you really shouldn't post photos like this. That's probably very enticing to him. You should probably take that down. And in that moment, it shifted the blame to me, like it was my fault that this was happening. And they weren't going to do anything about it. They said he wasn't doing anything wrong. They actually discouraged me from doing anything about it. And it just realized that narrative that you call the police and they'll come, or you reach out for help as a woman about harassment, that it wasn't necessarily true. I'm not saying it's not true for every person and every situation. I'm sure that there are some great, you know, this is not in any way an attack on the police force whatsoever. There are some great people out there that do really great work and really protect the people that deserve it. But it's not always true. It's not a narrative that is always true in every situation. And unfortunately, in my situation, that narrative turned out to have quite a few holes in it. And I received no help at a time that I needed a lot of help. I needed a lot of protection.
Sarah's parents were supportive in every way they could be from afar. And even though she was new and shy, community started to build up around her work.
Both of my editors at the time were extremely helpful and supportive. The publisher at the time actually offered to put me up in a hotel, and all of my coworkers were constantly checking on me. One of my colleagues, who became a really good friend of mine at the time, actually gave me a key to her apartment. And I think it was almost pretty crazy because it kind of solidified, like, this is what I'm meant to be, because I found kind of that community through all of this happening, through people rallying around me. And I also realized how important the outdoors were to me. You know, I realized how safe I felt outside, which, you know, maybe I wouldn't have realized. And I hate that it took something like this for me to realize that. But, you know, it was through this really difficult situation that I realized, wow, I really do feel safer outside than I do in a lot of other situations. And this is something I need to keep doing.
Sarah had Sunday and Monday off, so she started pushing boundaries of longer and longer day hikes and backpacking trips in order to get deeper into the backcountry. The further away from civilization and the less likely she was to see people on the trail, the safer she felt.
the deeper I backpack in, which might sound crazy. Like some people would be like, I would imagine you'd feel safer closer to the trailhead, but I actually feel safer like far in, like 10, 20 miles versus, you know, 4 miles. I just feel like there's like creating that distance between a possible human element and myself makes me feel more at peace.
And so when you got back to town Monday night, you know, working Tuesday through Saturday, how did those experiences in the outdoors help you during the week?
They helped me a lot. So I have been able to come out of my shell more, but I used to be like painfully shy. I mean, going to social things, I used to be like the shyest person there, and I maybe wouldn't speak up too much. But like going in the outdoors gave me something else to talk about besides work. And it gave me kind of a point of conversation and a way to connect with people. So, I mean, especially in the Northwest, when so many people, even if they're not avid hikers or backpackers, most people have at least done something outside. And so you can always connect through that. Like it gave me a conversation piece that I didn't have before. And it also gave me a confidence, like, you know, killing a trail, you know, summiting a peak. Even though there's so many other things that I want to cross off my list and so many things I have yet to do, I still have built so much, you know, confidence in the outdoors and so much, you know, of my, you know, identity. Like I've just, there's nothing like overcoming something on a trail that just gives you that confidence of like, heck yeah, I can do this. So if you like see something during the week, like a really hard story that I have to write or a crazy deadline, it's like, I can do this. Like under pressure, there are so many times where you can be under pressure in the outdoors where you're like the sun's setting and you need to get, you know, you need to find a camp space or you're like trying to find a water source or whatever. I've had crazier things happen than that, but it's just like that same under pressure feeling that you get. And it's just the same lessons that you can totally apply off trail.
What were the reactions of the people that you told about your solo outdoor experiences?
So they've definitely been mixed. I would say a lot of times what I get from people when I tell them that I hike outside alone or even with other females, or that I backpack alone or with other females or camp alone with other females, they ask me if it's safe for me to do. They're like, are you sure you should be doing that? Shouldn't you bring someone with you? Don't you have a boyfriend or, you know, a male friend that you can bring with you? It's always that reaction. You know, I think people expect me to say, oh, you know, I'm going out for a drink this weekend, or I'm doing this or that. And when I say, oh, I'm going to, you know, go backpacking in Washington this weekend, I always get that reaction. Are you sure that's safe for you to do? And, you know, it's just, it's another narrative of, is it safe being, you know, a woman in the wilderness, whether you're alone as a woman in the wilderness, or if you're with another girl alone in the wilderness, is that safe? It's almost like, you know, they're kind of inferring that it's not. And I always have two responses for that. The first is that a cougar or a bear, they're not going to discriminate based on your gender. And I'm sorry, but there's no guy that's going to be able to fight it off that much better. I mean, there's not much discrepancy there. I mean, we're as women just as able and capable of navigating a trail, of packing the right gear, of being able to handle ourselves out there as a man. And like I said, it doesn't discriminate by gender in the outdoors. So it's always a silly question. Of course I can handle myself. You know, if you're talking about the dangers of going solo, you know, I deal with more on my commute to work than I do in the outdoors. I deal more with things just walking down the street, you know, or shopping in the grocery store. I deal with far more sticky situations or harassment when I'm just in my, you know, nice little neighborhood in Portland than I do in any other situation outdoors. I mean, it's much different. I feel much safer. And if I ever feel unsafe in the outdoors, it's typically human related. You know, when I'm outside And I'm in the, you know, parking lot, still getting my bag zipped and ready to go. I've had, you know, sometimes guys saunter up who, you know, clearly aren't there to backpack. They're maybe just there for a view or something. And, you know, they make comments about what I look like or what I'm doing. You know, where are you going, sweetie? And those are the interactions that make me cringe. It's not the bears. It's not the cougars. It's definitely, you know, the men. And I deal with that far more in my off-trail life than I do in my on-trail life. I feel much safer in the backcountry than I do probably anywhere else.
It seems kind of crummy that, you know, when you're alone in the backcountry, you might as well be invisible, you know? And it, like, sucks that there's, that that's something that is freeing for women.
I agree. I completely agree. It does suck. It's, you know, I always, whenever I'm talking to people, because I always like encouraging, you know, women to get outside, I'm always encouraging people that, you know, are toying with the idea of getting outdoors. I'm like, absolutely get outdoors. Absolutely do it. Do it with me. Do it with a friend. Do it by yourself. And it is crazy that we do feel more empowered and safer outside when we are invisible a little bit. You know, we're not under the scrutiny of a man's gaze. We're not having to worry about a man's gaze lingering on us for too long, or, you know, a guy touching us in a way that we don't want to be touched. But it's very much a reality. And it's, it, whenever, because these questions I get when I go outside by myself are usually from men. They're not usually from women. You know, do you feel safe being a woman alone in the wilderness? And I'm like, do you know what's going on in our world right now? What everyone's talking about? Because it's kind of a reality check for them sometimes, I think, that they need to wake up to is, yes, I do feel safer outside. I feel safe. I feel safer than anywhere else because of what we have to deal with, what we women have to deal with on a near daily basis. And it's definitely not right, but, you know, it's kind of the situation.
You shared a part of this story on Outside a year ago. What was the reaction to that? Like, what kind of feedback did you get to the essay that you wrote?
I got so much positive feedback from men and women. You know, I was a journalist at a newspaper for 3 years, and so I was always used to getting an assortment of feedback on things that I would write, especially things that would trigger people. So I was prepared for a mixture of responses. But honestly, I have gotten nothing but support from women and men alike. People reaching out to me saying, I've been there. I've been in that situation. Or I also feel safer outside. I'm so glad that you talked about this, you know, and it made me feel good because first of all, I was like, good, I'm glad that they know they're not alone. But it was also like, I'm not alone, you know, other people have dealt with these things too. And I hate that they've had to deal with those things, but I'm glad that we can connect and get stronger because of this. And also shed more light on it so people can, you know, become educated. But the response was amazing. I mean, I even had like parents reaching out to me, like dads that were like, you know, I have a daughter who, you know, I'm always concerned about and your article struck a chord with me. And it was a really beautiful response. And I was really happy to see that, you know, it resonated with people.
Yeah, and you think about like the dad and the daughter and what he might encourage versus discourage based on reading the article.
Yeah.
I know that one thing that you hope is that the narrative changes in terms of, you know, the kind of questions that are asked of women, the, is this safe? Shouldn't you be bringing someone else, implying that it's a guy that you're bringing? Have you seen changes, though, in the last 5 years being out on the trail? Like, have you seen more solo women out there?
You know, I have. I read more about solo women. I hear more of it from people. I see more of it when I'm out there. I mean, I was on a trail with my friend Lauren a couple years ago in Washington, and we commented and kind of like we had these big grins on our faces, and we turned to each other and we're like, do you realize we've been hiking for a few hours now and all we've seen on this trail are solo women? We hadn't seen any men, and we're like, heck yeah. And we just were like, get it. I mean, we were so excited about it. So I think women are rewriting all of the narratives. I think they're rewriting their narratives one by one. We're taking back all of that power, and backpacking solo and feeling empowered by it is one way that women can take control of their narrative. It's just one of many ways that we're doing this. And I love seeing the way women are taking back power. I absolutely love it. And that's what I always encourage, is like, just because someone tells you that it's not safe to backpack alone, don't just take that and go with it and believe it. You know, if you feel safe, like, rewrite your narrative, question things, ask questions, ask other people who have done it, you know, find some of these mentors to look up to, and, you know, take control of your own story. You're the one that writes your own story. And it's not, you know, these other people that have control over your life. It's your story.
There are risks in going outside. Like, there are inherent risks. You know that it's not a utopia, but this has been your experience.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that's so important, because it's not like I'm comparing my commute to work and dealing with men on the train to like going out in Candyland. I mean, there are still inherent risks with backpacking. You have to make sure you have enough water. You need to know where your water sources are. You need to make sure you have, you know, enough propane to cook. You need to make sure you have the right clothing and just the right weather appropriate gear. You need to have your map and know where you're going and stay on trail and pay attention to sunset. There are so many things that you need to think about, and there are so many survival pieces to backpacking. It's not like there are no risks, but, you know, I still feel safer even with those risks, because I have some control over those. Even the ones I don't have control over still seem like less of a threat to me than the threats I deal with in everyday life. Just walking down the street, just going to my car, just going to the grocery store. Again, it feels a lot safer. And I'd any day of the week rather deal with the risks in the backcountry than I would in my off-trail life.
Would you say anything to your stalker if you could?
Would I want to say something to him? Yes. I would want to let him know that he didn't break me. Like, he didn't change my life for the worse. He made it a lot better, because, I mean, in that instance, that was a hard time. That was a hard thing for me to overcome. And that was very difficult. But I've only gotten stronger because of it. And, you know, I don't live in fear of him or of that necessarily happening again. I am aware of the possibility, but I'm stronger because of it. You know, I took back my power. I didn't relinquish it when he did that. I decided to take back my own power and move forward in so many ways, by talking about it, by writing about it, by hiking alone, and by, I hope, you know, empowering other women to take back power of their own stories, not let these circumstances define them. I know that I got lucky in my instance, because it was a stalker incident, and it ended there. He didn't assault me. And I know that that's not the way that every story ends, but I do think that there is light at the end of the tunnel, and I do think that women, you can take back control of your story and have that power, and I think that's beautiful.
Sarah wrote of her stalker in her essay for Outside Magazine, quote, "After 2 months, the call stopped. Police finally paid him multiple visits, and he got the point. Or at least it seemed. But I still had a nagging feeling he was watching me. I worried that I was no longer the target. Someone else was." Unquote. Sarah since moved to Portland, Oregon, but she still feels safest in the outdoors and on the move. Do you have any big hikes or backpacking trips planned this summer that you want to share?
Oh my gosh, I have so many. So I'm going to be hiking Goat Lake in Washington, backpacking that. I think it's a very beautiful trail that doesn't get enough attention. It's just absolutely gorgeous. Sisters Wilderness, I definitely plan to go to the Olympics and to also get the Alpine Lakes Wilderness. And I'm also going to take a solo road trip to New Mexico for a couple weeks. I'm going to just drive by myself down to Santa Fe, hang out, do some hikes, do some camping. I've never been to New Mexico, so I'm really excited for the landscapes. And then solo road trip back, do my own thing. I'm so excited.
Thank you, Sarah, for sharing your story. You can find Sarah on Instagram at Sarah Grothgen and read her writing at sarahgrothgen.com. That's Sarah Grothgen, G-R-O-T-H-J-A-N. I'll link both as well as her essay on Outside Online in the show notes and on the episode landing page via she-explorers.com. Thank you to our sponsor, Merrill. You can learn more via merrill.com. If you enjoy this podcast, there are two easy ways to help support us. First, spread the word. You can do this by leaving a review where you listen or sharing the podcast with a friend or taking a screenshot of the player and posting it on Instagram stories or whatever social media platform that you enjoy. Second, you can join our She Explores podcast Facebook group. It's really meaningful for me to be able to connect with listeners personally, and I love seeing all of you connect with each other and ask each other for outdoor advice and link up with each other and share in each other's triumphs and challenges. Music is by Lee Rosebear, Kay Ankle, and Josh Woodward.